I'm doing it tonight for only one reason. And it's going to be a couple of minutes before I tell you, so I hope you can stand the suspense. When the Apostle Paul gave his own defense once before a crowd, he described himself this way in introducing himself to them. He said, "I'm a Jew, born in Tarsus, but brought up in Jerusalem. Under Gamaliel, I was thoroughly trained under the law. I persecuted the followers of Jesus to their death, arresting both men and women. And one day as I came near Damascus, a bright light from heaven flashed around me. I fell to the ground and heard a voice say to me, 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' 'Who are you, Lord?' I asked. And he replied, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth. My companions led me by the hand into Damascus because the brilliance of the light had blinded me. There a man named Ananias came to see me. He stood beside me and said, "Saul, my brother, receive your sight." And at that very moment, I was able to see him. Then he said, 'The God of our fathers has chosen you to know his will and to hear words from the mouth of the Christ. You will be his witness to all men of what you have seen and heard.'" Ananias, one of the heroes of the Bible, the man who stood beside Paul and called him brother, and helped him to make sense out of what had just happened to him, and brought to him this word from God: "The God of our fathers has chosen you. You will be his witness." And Paul became a witness for Christ, as we all know, writing with the rest of his life one of the most important chapters in Christian history. Paul built bridges with his life. More than any other leader of the church, he bridged the gap between the church and the Gentiles, fighting some very hard battles at great cost to himself, so that the church would be unconditionally open to everyone rather than open to some and conditionally open to others. Look at Paul's life and you will see that he was especially equipped for such a bridge-building ministry. Born in Tarsus, a Gentile city with a reputation for culture, trained thoroughly in the Jewish law, zealous in his persecution of Christians, here was a man more cosmopolitan in his world outlook than many first century Jews, and with the kind of single-minded zeal that was required in order to put a bridge at the feet of the Gentiles. Such a bridge required a builder with one foot in the Jewish world and one foot in the Gentile world, and Paul was such a person. Looking back now, we can see the providence of God and selecting a person such as Paul. "Saul, my brother," said Ananias, "you will be his witness." Has anyone ever said that to you? You are especially commissioned by God to be a witness of what you have seen and heard in the name of Christ. I know we've been hearing that a lot this week. But if you have not yet really heard, and sometimes we can hear things without really hearing, I would like to stand beside you as a brother tonight and bring to you this word from God: you will be his witness. If this is not news for you, then I would like simply as a messenger to reaffirm your calling as a witness. Paul was not the first to build bridges with his life. The divine human life of Jesus was a bridge. In our study of John this week, we are being helped to take a look at the mystery of the incarnation. Here was one sent from God, the Word made flesh, one who had both feet in the world of God and both feet in the world of humans. And we learn from him that the only material we have for building bridges is the raw stuff of our lives. Jesus stretched himself, and he was the bridge. He became the way, providing new access to God. My one reason for talking about myself earlier was simply to say that here is some of the raw stuff of my life, some of the things that make up who I am. I can only build bridges with who I am. For better or for worse, The kind of stuff I mentioned to you is all that makes up what I have to offer. I cannot build bridges with who I wish I was or who I hope I will be. And my limitation is also your limitation. It was Paul's limitation. And can we dare say it? It was Jesus' limitation. That in itself should convince us that even with boundaries, the sky is the limit. To say that I can only build bridges with who I am is also to say that I can build bridges with who I am. Just as Paul was especially equipped to be a bridge builder to the Gentiles, you and I, with the raw stuff of our lives, are especially equipped to be bridges to someone. But that doesn't just happen. Do you want to be to someone what Ananias was to Paul? Then know, as Ananias did, that you have something to offer. And when you see Paul stumbling in his blindness, go to him as a brother or sister. To have Ananias' sense of purpose, we must believe, I mean deeply believe, that bridges are needed. That there are persons for whom God will never be real without the touch of another flesh and blood breathing person. On a low day in his life, the prophet Jeremiah said, "Cursed be the day I was born." Can you get any more in the pits than that? "May the day my mother bore me not be blessed." He goes on to curse the man who announced his birth. "Cursed be the man who brought my father the news, who made him very glad, saying, 'A child is born to you. A son. Why did I ever come out of the womb, only to live out my days in sorrow and shame?'" There are persons created in the image of God who feel that way about their lives. I see some of their faces in my mind right now. In a group this size, I would be very surprised that there's not someone here who feels that way. Others are more quietly desperate. At a college retreat, I heard someone tell about a classmate whose body was found in her room with this note beside her: "I feel so alone. If I walk across campus and back without seeing a friendly face, if no one speaks to me, I'm going to take my life." Some go ahead and live out their days, but with an aching hollowness. Others are plagued with guilt. In Albert Camus' novel, The Fall, a Parisian lawyer makes a long confession to an unknown listener in an Amsterdam bar. He recalls the night he walked across a bridge and saw a young woman leaning over the railing, staring at the water. He hesitated for a moment, his instincts telling him that the woman was in trouble, but he went on. He walked to the end of the bridge and about another 50 yards when he heard the sound of a body hitting the water. He stopped without turning around, trying to pretend that this was not really happening, heard the woman scream as the water carried her down the river, and he stood frozen. And years later, he was haunted by the cry of that woman and his guilt because of what he had not done. The stories of all who need human bridges are not so spectacular, but the need for God's forgiveness and companionship and friendship runs deep in the hearts of all who wear human flesh. If our eyes and ears are open at all, we will know that the problem facing us is not whether bridges, human bridges, are really needed. But the problem is where the bridges are. There simply are not enough. Persons with the courage and the willingness to be Ananias to a fellow human being Once we know and accept that we are called to be witnesses for Christ, we need to know a couple of things about bridge building. One, bridges are built in stages. Just a few days before my middle son's fourth birthday, my wife and I were unusually frustrated over his behavior. I had come home that afternoon to a house that was unusually quiet. My three sons are ages 7, 5, and 3. And when this happened, they were 6, almost 4, and 2. Now you have to understand, with children this age, and I hope they're normal, that in our house, noise is normal. I get worried when the noise is not there. And so I came home this particular afternoon and was struck by the absence of the sound of three boys running to the door, arguing over who got to open it first. I sensed that something was up and walked into the house, walked past the kitchen, and I glanced in and saw mustard spread all over the floor. I retreated and walked back through the dining room and into the hall and looked in the bathroom, and it was covered with water. Went on back to the bedroom, and there was my wife collapsed on the bed. And she said just one thing, the name of my middle son, Nathan. She went on to explain to me that what I had seen were just a couple of messes to which she had not yet gotten to and cleaned up. We walked into the kitchen, wondering what in the world we were going to do with this little guy. We sat down in these little chairs that they have in the kitchen with their table. And as we were sitting there, wondering what we were going to do, Nathan walked in. He walked over and didn't say a word at first. He just looked at his mustard mural on the floor. And obviously was enjoying his new art form, quite proud of it. And then he turned around and looked at us for a full minute, and we sat there looking at him. His birthday was on his mind, his approaching birthday. And apparently sensing that we were about at the end of our rope and needed to be comforted, a look of compassion came across his face. And he said in his gruff little voice, "Mom, Dad, when I'm 4, I won't be like I am now." I crack up every time I think about this. Nathan was exactly right. And when he's 6, he won't be like he is now. And 5 years from now, I won't be like I am now. Just as I'm not the person I was 5 years ago. I can't think of anything that has helped me more in understanding myself and others than the simple awareness that life unfolds developmentally. We are all under construction, in process, constantly changing. Knowing that can help us not only to appreciate and respect the complexity of others, but it seasons us with humility. Dogmatic certainties came much easier for me at 22 than they do at 32. I have a lot of things that I would like to say to you, and I'm being as focused as I possibly can be tonight. But one thing I think I would especially say is, please don't be too certain too early about too many things. Certainty can be deadly. Just ask the Pharisees of the first century who were so sure of themselves and what they believed. I would hope that in 10 years I would see more and see more deeply than I do now. I would be very disappointed if that's not the case. There is so much more to Christ that I have yet seen or heard. All of the titles that we have to describe Christ in the New Testament can all be taken together and they only begin to describe the mystery and the awesome greatness of this one. And there is so much about him that I have not yet seen. Several years ago, I heard Walter Jackson, a friend of mine and the counselor here this week, describe a painting of Christ. In the painting, Walter said, as one stands across the room, the eyes of Jesus are very warm and inviting, but the closer one gets to the painting, the eyes of Christ become more challenging and demanding and piercing. And I thought about that many times. As my own awareness of Christ has grown a little bit. And it's really quite disarming when you think that Christ is only tender and warm to realize how tough He is. And it's somewhat intimidating to experience in various ways Jesus coming along, up alongside you and saying, "What is so important to you is not on my list of priorities." And there are times that, even though I have never heard the voice of Jesus as Paul did, I could almost swear I heard him saying to me, "Steve, if you follow that dream, you can't follow me." And I'm so aware as I am here tonight that what I have to offer you and what I have to offer anyone is my confidence in Christ. Not my absolute confidence in my understanding of Christ. I hope I can come back in a few years and tell you a little more than I can right now. But there's a world of difference between the two. Second, bridges are built for two-way traffic. Bridges are built for two-way traffic. I'm not used to people taking notes when I speak, so I'll try to accommodate you. I am at least as affected by others as they are by me. For me, one of the most satisfying things about being a pastor, and at the same time one of the most painful things, is that there have been many people who have been very generous and allowed me to share life with them. And I will report to you that I am overwhelmed and more than humbled at the courage with which many people live out the days of their lives. Many times I have been with someone as the helping person, and instead of that person walking across my bridge into the presence of God, I have used his or hers. Being an Ananias means having something to offer Paul, but it also means being willing to follow Paul. I think perhaps this is where we stumble most in our good intentions to be evangelistic. We are so eager for others to put their feet on our bridge, but we are not so willing to put our feet on theirs and to walk with them. And to let them touch us as we hope to touch them. An evangelism that does not do that may have results, but there's not much substance. We are all more alike than different. That's one of the things I've learned from being a pastor. I didn't even learn that in seminary. I had a recent visit with a woman who has struggled with alcoholism for many years. And at this particular moment, she was not on top of the struggle. She was not even very sober. And I'm going to have to clean up her language a little bit. I understand these messages are on tape. And I'd probably be too chicken to say it out loud anyway. But the essence of what she was saying, and she spoke out of complete frustration. And I quote her verbatim, except for the expletives. "Steve, I'm no good." No, that's not true. I am good. And I agreed with her. She is good. How can I be good and no good at the same time? I have never struggled with alcoholism. But the bridge between the two of us in that moment was much greater, much bigger than any chasm. For she had put into expression the human dilemma, being good and no good at the same time. I am held in the power of that dilemma, and so are you. I hope you knew that. There are many ways in which we are set free, and experiential grace makes all the difference in the world. But for now, my friends, we are both good and no good at the same time. And that in itself should keep us sensitive to the fact that when we are with someone, the traffic on the bridge is two-way traffic. How can we be a bridge to others? How can we be to the people in our lives what Jesus was to so many? What Ananias was to Paul, what Paul was to the Gentiles? How can we have a part in making the love of Christ real to someone and ushering them into the presence of God? Of course, we're here this week to learn the answers to these questions. But they are not answers that can be reduced to simple 1, 2, 3 practical how-to. I think one way we can learn how to be that to other people is to listen to our own hearts. The 17-year-old Bailey King can help us. Somewhere, there's someone, somewhere, to love me, to care. When I heard Bailey saying that, I heard echoes in my own heart, and I was saying, that's me. In my own felt needs, give me a clue into how I can be Ananias to others. Now, sometimes I wish that I could describe evangelism and practice evangelism easily, but I can't. And I have found, too, in my own experience, that when the deepest truth struggles for birth and tries to express itself, it often comes out poetically. The Gospel of John is a perfect example of that. The mood of poetry, not literal prose. I came across a poem recently by Ann Ashford. It's a different kind of poem. But as I share it with you now, I think maybe you'll be able to see your own face in these words, your own needs. And if you want to know what the Bailey Kings and what the other people who are more like us and they are different are needing and what they are longing for, even when they deny outwardly the deepest hungers of their heart, hear these words. If I found a wistful unicorn and brought him to you all forlorn, would you pet him? If I took an empty midnight train across the country in the rain, would you meet me? If I picked a little flower up and put it in a paper cup, would you smell it? If I found a secret place to go with you, the only one to know, would you be there? If my cricket coughed and got the flu and needed warmth and comfort too, would you hold him? If my rainbow were to turn all gray and wouldn't shine at all today, would you paint it? If my birch tree were afraid at night and couldn't sleep without a light, would you bring one? If my soul were feeling all alone and was nowhere near a telephone, would you write to it? If I ran backwards up a tree and called for you to follow me, would you do it? If my nightingale were a monotone and much too shy to sing alone, would you hum with him? If all that I would want to do would be to sit and talk with you, would you listen? If any of these things you'll do, I'll never have to say to you, do you love me? Part of my own faith, and I think part of your faith, is the belief that one day we shall see Christ face to face. I'm going to have a lot of questions when I get off my knees, for there are some things that puzzle me deeply. But one question that will be unnecessary is, Jesus, do you love me? He has made it known to me through the Ananias in my life. His love for us. Love that is tough and tender at the same time. Love that is full of grace and is also full of truth and tells us the truth about ourselves. That is one thing you can be certain about. But the Christ who broke into Paul's life wants everyone to know that they are completely understood and completely loved, that there is nothing they can do to so repulse him that he turns away. No one has ever been forsaken by Jesus, and no one ever will be. May the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God the Father and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be more than enough to convince you that before the world ever was, you were in the mind of God, and that you were created for a special reason, that God has caused His face to shine upon you, and that you are held in the Father's love even when you don't know it, and that grace on top of grace on top of grace is yours for the receiving. And then may others come to know it because you tell them, you show them, you build a bridge in their direction with your life.